Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, we look ahead to a Congress on stem cell research beginning Wednesday here in the Vatican, and at what has brought a Vatican council into supporting a cutting-edge biotech company. And as U.S. bishops begin their ad limina visit here in Rome, we speak to Rhode Island Bishop Thomas Tobin about the challenges and changes facing his diocese. Seventy-four-year-old Bernie Van Zyl died but was brought back to life in a Florida hospital some years ago. He suffered from congestive heart failure, a condition for which there is no real cure. Bernie was waiting for a heart transplant when he heard about the potential of adult stem cells as treatment for heart disease. He participated in a clinical trial to repair his heart using his own adult stem cells and made a complete recovery, and has since written two books to tell people how the extraordinary therapy changed his life. College freshman Bethany Pappalardo suffered surprise attacks of multiple sclerosis that would leave her legs and even her whole body numb. After receiving an adult stem cell transplant 3 years ago, her MS attacks have stopped, and she's living and functioning normally in every way. These are the stories of just two patients to receive life-saving treatment with adult stem cells. In many cases, the cells can be harvested from a patient's own body, often from the bone marrow or blood. These miracles, says Dr. Robin Smith of the U.S. biopharmaceutical company NeoStem, come without the ethical dilemmas posed by the use of embryonic stem cells. No embryos are destroyed to collect adult stem cells, she assures those concerned about the ethical implications of the research, so no human life is destroyed in an effort to improve life for those who are struggling with debilitating diseases. I met Dr. Smith on a recent visit to the Vatican, where she came to give details about her company's new partnership with the Pontifical Council for Culture, which has made a big investment in NeoStem's research into the therapeutic potential of adult stem cells. Well, as their first collaborative project to raise awareness about adult stem cell research, the two will be hosting an interdisciplinary congress in the Vatican this week from November 9th through the 11th. Experts in the fields of medicine, health, and ethics will be focusing on the theme adult stem cells, science, and the future of man and culture. But it will be in an easy-to-follow, down-to-earth way that even the laymen can understand. And that's important because political and legislative leaders, those who determine health policy, will also be attending. Well, I asked Dr. Smith how the partnership with the Council for Culture first came about.
We were introduced, and Father Trafney, who's very well read, was very excited about adult stem cells and our particular technologies. And we spent much time together talking about philosophies and stem cells and the promise and the science and how it impacts culture. And the collaboration went from there.
Now, one news report that I read described this new partnership as the odd couple. Were you surprised that that the Vatican would be interested in scientific research?
Well, not really. If you really go back in history, you'll see that many scientists, many people who have had been recognized as being acclaimed for their input into science have been men of faith. So if you look at Gregoire Mendel, who's considered to be the father of modern genetics, it's not new. So this was a wonderful way of putting science forward and faith and having a way to impact human suffering without doing it in a way that was ethically challenging or had any moral implications.
Mm. Now, the partnership has a validity of 5 years, as I understand it, with an option for renewal. What conditions did the Vatican lay out?
You know, it's not so much conditions. I think we both want the same things, and it's a beginning of a partnership, and there are people we'll bring into this family and this fold, and I think our breakthrough event in November will help bring people from around the globe together who are all interested in how adult stem cells can repair tissue and impact so many people's health.
What advances have been made in the area of adult stem cell research?
Mm-hmm. What people don't realize is for 30 years, we've used adult stem cells. It's called a bone marrow transplant. So we focused on this. There are over 70 diseases currently being treated with adult stem cells, such as leukemia, lymphoma, multiple myeloma, anemia. But what we're recognizing is these cells in our own body have regenerative properties. So it's not just to reconstitute a person's immune system. These cells can now be used to repair tissue. And all of the science, the many clinical trials that are going on, are looking at the type of stem cells, how they can be delivered, how these adult stem cells can impact the body to create new blood vessels, to repair tissue that gets damaged from diseases like heart attack, stroke, diabetes, eyes from macular degeneration. And that's the focus, how to use cell therapy to repair damaged tissue.
What is the success rate the proven success mm-hmm. rate? How many patients have you been able to see who've been treated for cardiac problems, liver, or eye problems?
There are thousands and thousands of patients that have been treated in clinical trials in the United States, and people being treated around the world. So I think the key is how to make this standard of care. And that's what all of these trials are doing, is focusing on the exact type of stem cells, how many stem cells get delivered, and how they get delivered, so that it can become standardized throughout the world.
Was it your company, NeoStem, that was that had a project with patients who had eye problems, and they had a cure rate, which seemed to me to be quite extraordinary?
Mm-hmm. We have very exciting technology. One of our technologies are called V-cells, very small embryonic-like stem cells. They have all the benefits of an embryonic stem cell without the moral and ethical issues because they come from adults. And we're looking to use these cells as how to repair vision with to create rods and cones for things like macular degeneration, glaucoma, retinal injury.
Okay. It was formerly thought that adult stem cells taken from a patient might provide the safest treatment for that very patient. But some research has proven that theory to be wrong, at least to a certain extent, mm-hmm. with patients' immune systems rejecting therapy created from their own cells. Is this a surmountable problem? And do you see the same sort of rejection issues also in embryonic stem cell mm-hmm. research?
So you are right. People were very excited a few years ago with iPS cells. It was how you could take a piece of skin and reprogram it to become a stem cell. But the problem is when you genetically alter a piece of skin to make a stem cell, you create abnormal proteins. And what we're finding is the body sees that not as normal and rejects those cells as if they were cells from another person or from an embryo. Our stem cells that we're focused on, our adult stem cells, are our own. Our body recognizes them as our own, engrafts them more quickly, and you don't have the issues of rejection. So the key is to find these pluripotent stem cells that you're not inducing and making early stem cells, because those create these proteins that are not good for your body. Mm. So that is the promise. That's the exciting part, is that we have stem cells locked in our body that have the reparative mechanisms that we need to impact human disease.
And the safety concerns there in embryonic stem cell research?
Yeah, because they're not yours. And because these stem cells are so early in development, there's difficulty putting them down a lineage of what they can become without cancer formation and teratoma formation. So you could be trying to make tissue in the spinal canal in the brain. Maybe it would create some brain tissue, but you also cause tumors and teratoma formation. So there are a lot of safety issues with embryonic stem cells, as well as the more ethical issues.
I'm not familiar with the term teratoma.
Teratoma, so it's kind of like a hairy, teethy tumor. So these cells become all lineages of cells. So you may think you're making a nervous cell, like a nerve, but you end up with a hair and teeth and all these other things from the germ layers. So that's not good for the human body. And you also can get cancer formation. So there are a lot of safety issues. And it's important to recognize that we want to repair tissue in a healthy way. We don't want to cause another problem when we treat patients.
Am I wrong? But it seems that there's less interest in pursuing adult stem cell research over embryonic stem cell research.
I don't think that's the case. I think that there's a lot more controversy with embryonic stem cells. So it seems that people are really focused on this. But every day, if you look at the medical literature, if you look at these clinical studies, people are becoming more and more excited about the potential and the advancement of adult stem cell therapy.
It seems that the possibilities of this new sort of regenerative medicine are really limitless. Where is it taking us, this sort of research?
Well, there's clearly a paradigm shift in how we treat disease. And I think the solutions to many different illnesses and diseases and tissues will be with stem cells. So I don't think it is limitless. And I think that's why the cultural impact is so important, because this will affect so many diseases, so many people worldwide. And we need to look at how this change in medicine and these advancements will affect the world globally.
The Vatican is hosting this three-day conference in
yes.
November. What is your participation in it, and can you talk a little bit more about
sure.
how NeoSTEM is involved?
Well, we're working together with the Vatican. We don't want this to be a scientific conference. Science is part of it, but this is multidimensional. It has ethical implications, so we'll be talking about ethics, cultural implications, education. So we're going to have a very multidisciplinary approach. We'll have leaders from around the world. We'll have influential people that will together determine how, as a nation, as a world, we can move adult stem cells forward. And people can really understand that this isn't maybe 5-10 years from now. It is today. There are people who have been cured, that have been treated successfully with adult stem cells, and we need to continue this moving forward so that many people around the world can be treated with adult stem cells.
And what is the Vatican's partnership with your company? What does that mean for you?
It's very exciting. You know, so many people follow the Catholic Church, and it's important to educate. So if we could use their voice and together have people understand the benefits and what an adult stem cell is, people don't understand. You know, they don't understand what the difference is between adult stem cells, embryonic stem cells. You know, is it okay? Is it something that is sanctioned by the Catholic Church or not? So it's understanding. And I think we couldn't have a better partner in helping the world understand the importance of adult stem cells and working with us to get collaborators from around the globe to be focusing on this issue, working together so that we can have an impact on many, many people that we alone, as one small company, couldn't do on our own.
Dr. Robin Smith is the Chief Executive Officer of NeoSTEM. Well, Head of Science and Faith at the Pontifical Council for Culture, Father Tomas Trafni, says his job is to explore the cultural impact of scientific advancement, and that's what attracted his council to NeoSTEM in the first place. The company was conducting its own research into the ethical and cultural impact of adult stem cell treatment on society.
So we heard from Dr. Smith, her take on how the partnership came about. Why was the Vatican interested, and particularly your council, interested in investing in this kind of research?
Well, there are many reasons. First of all, because, as it was already mentioned, regenerative medicine and science is already providing for deep global impact. And we think that it would modify our understanding of society, and it would provoke a lot of existential, philosophical, and even theological questions that we need to think about in advance. Many people complain that usually church is speaking about some scientific research or achievements when everything is already done. What we try to do, we try to look ahead and to explore tendencies and possibilities that scientific research is providing for, and to see how they would impact globally society, humanity.
Well, in fact, I was reading the Osservatore Romano, and you had a comment there where you said, scientific advances in the area of stem cell research could one day throw into question the idea of the uniqueness and integrity of the human body. in a world where we could even see immortality as a possibility, what that would indicate that the Vatican wants to get in on the ground floor, like you were just saying, of this new scientific research that could have resounding theological and ethical implications.
Yes, well, we have to realize that scientists were talking about these specific topics many years ago. In 1964, Richard Feynman gave a lecture on Galileo issue and affair. And within this lecture, he mentioned that there is nothing in the biology that indicates the necessity of death. And 50 years ago, almost 50 years ago, it was seen as, you know, a crazy statement. But today people can see, and scientists can see, that cells have potentiality to reproduce themselves, and some of them are already raising a question if we will be able in the future to provide for unlimited regeneration. Of course, probably it would be not the case, but people are thinking about that. And this is interesting because it would shape human mentality and human way of thinking about ourselves, our body, our potentialities, and definition of who we are.
And, our relationship with God.
Of course.
It's not the first time that the church is putting its money where its mouth is. We saw, at least in one case, the church in Australia with Cardinal George Pell, who donated tens of thousands of dollars to research in adult stem cell research, because the Catholic Church is very concerned about using embryos, the destruction of embryos, for any kind of research.
Of course. And not only Australian Church invested in this kind of research. In 2005, South Korean Bishops' Conference made a decision to invest almost $10 million to foster adult stem cells research. And there is a significant involvement of the Church in that, because we need to show that the idea and our mission of protecting life, they are not only words, but there's a concrete action that we want to deliver to the society, and to show that there is possibility of developing highly performed research, excellent research, with good results, without any ethical, you know, problems or difficulties.
The fact that the Vatican has invested a substantial sum in this company, NeoStem, does that mean that you are in some way financially possibly going to benefit from this relationship?
No, we don't expect any financial return. As a Pontifical Council or the Holy See itself, and as a matter of fact, there's not the Holy See that invests money, but people that are close to us, our sponsors, benefactors, who share the same idea, the same values, and they want to help us to establish not only a good relationship to scientific community, but to explore possibilities of deep collaboration and promoting this kind of science that is excellent and morally acceptable.
And a warm thanks there to Father Tomas Trafny of the Pontifical Council for Culture. The bishops of the United States have begun making their way to Rome as their ad limina visit to the Eternal City and the Vatican has officially kicked off. It is their first ad limina visit in 7 years. Traditionally, bishops are required to make this visit to the doorstep of the apostles to pray at the tombs of St. Peter and Paul and to update the Pope about the challenges and activities of their diocese.
With some 450 bishops, the USCCB is one of the largest bishops' conferences in the church, and the ad limina visit will come in phases over the next year. The first region to travel here to Rome was the northeastern United States, with bishops from the ecclesiastical province of Hartford, who met Pope Benedict XVI at the weekend. Bishop Thomas Tobin of Providence, Rhode Island, spoke to Emer McCarthy about the ad limina visit and notes that though his diocese is largely Catholic, it is not immune to challenges and changes that are currently facing the church around the world.
Firstly, if you wouldn't mind, Bishop Tobin, please just taking us through how this ad limina is being broken down, because you are a very big conference, so you can't possibly all come together.
It would be impossible for all the bishops to travel at once and to do everything we need to do while we are visiting in Rome. The United States Bishops' Conference is divided into 14 sections, and we are the first section that is participating in the ad limina visit this year. And then there are several other regions that are visiting before the end of the year, and then the rest will begin right after the beginning of the new year. So it's a very long process involving 14 regions from the United States. And we are the first one. So people, I suppose, are watching us very closely to see what comes out of this first ad limina visits. I think the other bishops of the United States are very interested in what we will report from our week here in Rome.
This is the first ad limina visit in 7 years, which basically means your last ad limina visit was with Blessed Pope John Paul II. This is your first ad limina visit with Benedict XVI. You met him on Saturday. Your impressions of that meeting?
So we were here in the year 2004, which is the last full year before our Holy Father, Blessed John Paul II, passed away. But this is our first opportunity to meet with Pope Benedict. And I suppose it has been 7 years because it's just a very, very busy schedule, and the change in the papacy and the changes have taken place. The Holy Father met with the bishops in a small group, in our case just the bishops from the province of Hartford. So there were only six or seven bishops present with the Holy Father. An opportunity, first of all, to take some nice photos with the Holy Father, but then to have a beautiful little discussion with him for almost a half hour, I would say, in which the Holy Father was very anxious to hear about particular questions or particular issues that each one of us bishops were addressing in our own dioceses. And he responded to each point we made. He was extraordinarily interested in and extraordinarily alert to what we were saying and to the suggestions we made. So it was a beautiful opportunity. I think every bishop came out of our meeting with the Holy Father very moved and very impressed.
Looking at the Diocese of Providence, in the 7 years that have lapsed since the last time you were over here in Rome, what has changed in the last 7 years? What challenges is the diocese facing that perhaps it wasn't facing before? And perhaps what fruit has been borne in the last 7 years?
First, a little background might be helpful. The Diocese of Providence is in the state of Rhode Island, which some of our listeners might know that the state of Rhode Island is the smallest state in the United States. But statistically, the Diocese of Providence, that covers the whole state of Rhode Island, is the most Catholic state in the Union. Statistically, our population is about 60% Catholic. That's because of the large number of immigrants who have come to our state over the years and continue to come to our state today. They come from Catholic countries. So it is a small state, but it is intensely Catholic, with many, many parishes and schools and organizations and institutions. It's a beautiful place in which to be a bishop. But we are not immune from all the challenges that the church around the world and in the United States has faced in a very particular way. And I suppose the challenges we face can fall into several categories. First of all, we live in a very secular world, a world that is very secular, sometimes atheistic, almost pagan. And the church finds itself, even though we have large numbers of Catholics, sometimes we find ourselves, from a political point of view, being in a very difficult situation. So responding to those challenges, the moral, the political, the social challenges in which the church finds itself, is a constant work for us. Another area that's of constant concern is the sacramental practice of the faithful. Our faithful people, who are good people, still many have drifted away from the church for a variety of reasons. But the sacramental practice of our Catholics continues to be a great concern. Fewer people are attending Sunday Mass than did a generation or two generations ago. The whole question of the sacrament of holy matrimony is being challenged on many different fronts, and matrimony, of course, is the basis of family, is a serious concern for us. The viability of our Catholic schools is important. As you know, we receive no state funding for our schools, so the question of enrollment and financial viability of our schools and some of our parishes continues to be a major concern. Working with young people in our schools and campus ministry, that's a constant work for us as well. So all of these things come together to form challenges for us that are not unique to the Church of the United States and certainly not unique to the Diocese of Providence, but very real and pressing challenges nonetheless.
The Diocese of Providence, which, as you said, is within Rhode Island, one of the most Catholic states in the United States, is not alien to the problem of secularization and the falling away of many faithful from the Catholic Church. To combat this phenomenon, particularly in Western countries, in the Western world, Pope Benedict XVI set up a new council, the Council for New Evangelization. Not only that, he decided that the next General Synod of Bishops will be dedicated to the theme of new evangelization. But many ordinary Catholics still don't understand what all this means. I mean, is it just another laboratory of words? What is new evangelization? How do you see it and perceive it? And how do you put it into action within your own diocese?
In some ways, and I'm very happy and very proud to say this, the Diocese of Providence has already begun this work. In the year 2010, in our own diocese, we proclaimed a year of evangelization, which had several emphases. First of all, we wanted to increase the presence of the Church in the public life, in our community, in our society, which we did in many, I think, very effective ways. We also made a special effort to reach out to those Catholics who were lapsed Catholics, inactive Catholics, those who have stopped coming to church, as we said, for many different reasons. We made a very particular and determined effort to reach out to those fallen away Catholics and invite them back to our church.
How? I don't mean to interrupt you, but can you give me a practical example about how you actually do that?
Well, we did that. Our work was based mostly from a parish point of view. So we asked every parish to do something, and every parish did perhaps their own thing. They did different things. Some, very simple, was putting out a welcoming banner that the public could see outside of their church. Some had a series of catechetical issues or programs, either in their parish Sunday bulletins or in the particular classes they would hold. Some had beautiful ceremonies of reconciliation or listening sessions, inviting people to come back and just to share their concerns and their disappointments with the church. Some of our parishes worked through our Catholic schools, trying to engage the parents more in the life of the church. We used lots of media opportunities with advertisements on the radio and newspaper and television. So it was a multifaceted effort to make the church more present and to reach out to lapsed Catholics and to speak to those who had no church home at all, the unchurched, those who had never been Catholic, invited them to come and see. So that was our year of evangelization in the year 2010. So I was thrilled when the Holy Father has placed this emphasis now on the new evangelization and especially his gift of the proclamation of the year of faith. And I was able to say with a great deal of pride to the Holy Father, that would be a great gift to our own diocesan church, the year of faith, because it will build upon what we've already tried to do in the Diocese of Providence. So the sense of new evangelization, as Pope John Paul II said, the content is not new, but there needs to be a new emphasis and a new excitement and new enthusiasm for the beauty of our Catholic faith and our desire to share that faith with others.
Bishop Thomas Tobin of Providence, Rhode Island. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.